I'd like to always start with what I call a spiritual icebreaker. And this is a story that we should all take to heart because it has a very powerful message. Back in about the 8th century, there was a very wealthy widower who had one son. And he came to his son one day and he said, "Son, I want you to do me one favor." And without question, the son said, "Dad, I'll do whatever you say." And he said, "I've arranged to have you sold as a slave to a good friend of mine who's quite wealthy. And that will give me enough money to take care of myself. And I only have two instructions for you. Always be obedient to whatever he tells you, with one exception. If you're carrying out some task that he told you to do and you pass by a church and there's a service going on, then you go right into that service and you stay to the very end." So he did it, his father said, and after about 6 months, the owner just loved this man. He almost treated him like a son. And so one day he had to go to the Constantinople and he forgot certain papers, and he had that young man with him, and he sent him back, told him exactly where in his bedroom the papers were. Well, he went back, but he didn't look around. He went right to that place. He got the papers and left. But what he didn't see was his wife was having an affair with one of the slaves. And she thought that she was seen by this other slave. So when he came back, she kind of disheveled herself and said, "This man attacked me." And he was just dumbfounded because he said, "I'm a good judge of character. How could he do this?" And then she said, "I want his head." Now he's got to, how can you get his head unless you get two people to agree that he actually did this? So he found two people that agreed, yes, he did this. And so he went to the judge and they set up this particular plan. The good slave would go there and say, "I'm here to receive something from my master." And while he wasn't looking, they would cut off his head and then send another slave to come and bring the head back. Well, the young man took the advice and he started towards the governor of the judge's office, but he passed a church and there was a service and it was a vigil. So he's sitting in that service for hours. In the meantime, the wife's getting a little nervous. What's going on? So the one who did the deed said, "I'll go find out." So he goes there. They cut off his head. Then after the service is over, the good slave comes and picks up the head and takes it back. And of course, the wife almost commits hara-kiri when she sees that he's holding the head of someone else. It happened to be her lover. And the good person was so impressed by this young man that he actually made him an heir and adopted him as his son. But the lesson for us is twofold. Always obey your parents and never leave church early because you don't know what's going to happen. Okay, brothers and sisters, we're going to kind of cut some things back here because I don't want to take advantage of your kindness too long. So I'm going to ask Father to read all of chapter 13 of 1 Corinthians, and then we're going to go over a few of the verses. And we're going to see how those verses come alive in about four different examples of real love. Please, Father, read that chapter.
"If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but I have not love, I have become a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophecy and know all the mysteries and all the knowledge, and if I have all the faith so as to remove mountains from one place to another, but I have not love, I am nothing. And if I dole out all of my goods, and if I deliver up my body that I may be burned, but I have not love, I am being profited nothing. Love is long-suffering. Love is kind. Love is not jealous. Love vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave unseemly, seeketh not its own, is not provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in unrighteousness, but rejoiceth in the truth. Covereth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Love never falleth away. But whether there be prophecies, they shall be done away. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. whether knowledge it shall be done away. For we all know in part, and we all prophesy in part. But whenever that which is perfect should come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was an infant, as an infant I used to talk, as an infant I used to understand, as an infant I used to reason. But when I became a man, I did away with the things of an infant. For now we see by means of a mirror darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall fully know, even as I also was fully known. And there now abideth faith, hope, love, these three things. But the greatest of these is love.
Okay, Father, just reread the first three verses.
Okay. If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but I have not love, I have become a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophecy and know all the mysteries and all the knowledge, and if I have all the faith so as to remove mountains from one place to another, but I have not love, I am nothing. And if I dole out all of my goods, and if I deliver up my body that I may be burned, but I have not love, I am being profited nothing.
Now, St. Basil the Great gives us kind of a summary of those three verses that Father just read. He says, it is evident, therefore, and undeniable that without love, even though ordinances are obeyed and righteous acts are being performed, even though the commandments of the Lord have been observed and great wonders of grace are occurring, they will be regarded as works of iniquity, not for any cause inherent in the acts of the righteous themselves, because they who perform these acts have as their aim the gratification of their own wills. So if we do everything not for God, but for ourselves, eventually it'll catch up with us. And there's a story in the life of St. Anthony that kind of illustrates that. One day when he was in prayer, he got a great pain within himself, and he realized a great light had fallen. And sure enough, a younger Gerunda abbot had come to him and made this statement to him. Gerunda, I've fallen, but pray that I get 3 days and I can fix it. And he died in 2. And the key here was he didn't ask for God's help. He figured that he could do it. So the message here is everything that we do, it must be done out of love for Christ. The act itself isn't bad. In fact, one of the fathers one day in Egypt saw a strange vision where there were these people in this terrible place. It stunk, and they were covered with mud, but their hands were gold. And a voice came and said, do you know what this is, Father? And he said, no, please explain. He says, these people lived a terrible life, but they did some good deeds. So their souls in hell have golden hands. But I don't think we'd want to have that. I think we'd want to be clean in the kingdom of God. But let's go to the real heart of this particular passage. That's what they call the love chapter. And I'm going to ask Father to again read verses 4-7, because that's where we're going to put most of our emphasis today.
Love is long-suffering, is kind. Love is not jealous. Love vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave unseemly, seeketh not its own, is not provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in unrighteousness, but rejoiceth with the truth, covereth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things.
Okay, look at this now. The first three words here, you know, love suffers long and is kind. We could probably spend the rest of our life on those five words, because everything we really need to know about love is right there. The Greek word for long-suffering, we need to talk about a little bit. Makrothymia. It's very hard to put this into English, but an old lady I used to call my adopted grandmother, I asked her one day, she had about a third grade education. I said, what's makrothymia? And she came right out and said, it's having a big soul. And I thought for a minute, you know, if we take this cup here and we put the most pure, pristine water in it and take a big handful of mud and stick it in there, what's going to happen? Who's going to want to drink it? Or let's say if it's big as a pot like this, still we're not going to want to drink it. But what if it's the size of a swimming pool? In other words, the bigger the area, the least effect that mud will have. So if you've got a big soul, when irritations come, you can handle it because your soul is so big. Now, if your soul is tiny, then the slightest thing can hurt you. But you will have to always attack with long suffering the word kind. There are people who can hold it in, but they're not kind. And that eventually catches up with them. I remember a story years ago that the Father Thomas Hopgood of blessed memory told about this couple who were the janitors of the church for like 30 years. And so they decided to have a nice little meal for them and give them a watch or whatever they gave them. And the husband got up and thanked everybody, and then the wife got to the microphone and she said, "Now you're going to see what it's going to be like without us, who took all your garbage for all these years." So she held it in, but when the time came to be kind, she couldn't do it. So those two have to be combined, to be long-suffering, have a big soul, and also be kind. Now I have the great joy of doing what I like the best, illustrating those four verses, 4-7, with examples. And the first one, of course, comes from the Old Testament. The holy patriarch Joseph indeed was long-suffering and kind, inherent in the real true love. As you know, his brothers faked his murder and then sold him for 20 pieces of gold to the Ishmaelites, the future Muslims. He didn't resist them. He didn't show any anger. Years later, the Pharaoh put him in charge of all of his wealth. And when he didn't take his position as a way to get back to his family, but on the contrary, he brought them in and took care of all of them with much joy. But his encounter with Potiphar's wife, whom Joseph was purchased, indicates that love was present in his words and his actions. Of course, as you know, the Egyptian woman tried to seduce him. Of course, what she was trying to give him was not love, but diabolical desire. St. Chrysostom said, it was as if she was telling the patriarch, "Insult me, make me an adulteress, wrong my husband, overthrow all my house, and cast yourself out from your confidence in God." Then he spoke to this woman, this 27-year-old man, with gentleness and kindness, and explaining how God sees everything, trying to lift her from that pit of carnal desire. And if we have time to talk in discussion, we need to talk about that pit today, because in the United States, that pit seems almost bottomless. God help us. Unfortunately, of course, she was still blinded by her desires, and she grabbed his garment. And rather than sin, he ran out naked. The lesson for all of us: you don't stand and fight that carnal desire. You run from it. Run away, because that demon has got so many faces. They're all dangerous. We need to teach our children, don't feed it. What feeds it? Dirty jokes, dirty language, watching certain things on the internet, certain movies. All these things feed that demon. There's another thing that feeds the demons that I didn't find out till a few years ago. When we judge other people, God permits that demon to attack us. So don't judge others. Okay, we also want to do things that shrink it. What shrinks it? The Jesus prayer, fasting, and prostrations. And don't ever think you've conquered that demon. With God's help, maybe you'll keep it in check all your life. There was a monk one time who prayed 15 years every day, "Lord, grant that I may be conquering the demon of lust." And after 15 years, he went to the abbot and he says, "Abbot, I've conquered lust." And he was really happy. And the abbot said, okay, my son. He says, let me ask you something. He says, what would you do if there was a beautiful naked woman right over here? And he grabbed his prayer rope and started saying the Jesus prayer. And he said, stop. He said, if you truly had conquered that demon, you wouldn't know whether that was a man or a woman. So what I'm trying to say is, the conquering of it is for very, very, very few, if any. But with God's grace, you can always keep it in check by not feeding it and by trying to do the things that shrink it. Another example of a long-suffering and a kind person, and Father, I don't know the name of this bishop, but in the 40s, a roll car bishop was accused by a woman of molesting her. He didn't take any defense, just like Joseph did, the patriarch. They brought it to trial. He was in the courtroom praying. They put the woman on the stand and said, is this the man that molested you? And she looked at him and she began to weep. And she said, I lied. He did nothing to me. And they all went up to him afterwards and said, Vladika, why didn't you defend yourself? You know what his response was? Children, I'm a sinner. He was willing to accept that because he had other sins. Love is long-suffering and is kind. Here's another example of a modern Greek Orthodox saint. I'm sure many of you may have heard of him. Saint Papa Nicholas Planas. How many of you have heard of that saint? He lived during the first part of the 20th century, and he was glorified as a saint in 1992. He was probably closer to being illiterate than literate, but he was such a holy man that children used to see him walking above the ground, even outside the church. And there was this one woman, a rather wealthy woman, who always was trying to find ways to prove that priests that people were saying were so holy were really not that holy. So she came to his church and said, Papa Plana, I've got a problem. I want you to come to my house every day for 40 days and do a supplicatory canon of the Theotokos. Said, with pleasure, I'll come. So he came and he did the service. And after the service, she gave him equivalent to a dime. He said, thank you, and he took it. He did that again for the next 39 days. At the time, he was in his mid-70s, and it was at least a good three-hour journey by foot to her house every day. But from what we know about Papa Banach being close to God, an angel probably took him pretty quick. However, at the end of those 40 days, she fell to the ground and begged his forgiveness. She could see that he truly, indeed, was a very holy man. The next story will provide us, among other things, all the characteristics of love that are expressed in verse 7. Endures all things, bears all things, hopes all things, believes all things. It's taken from the spiritual meadows of the blessed John Moskos. And the name of the story is the brother who would not leave a sinful brother and won back his soul. In the monastic community of Theodosius, there were two brothers who had sworn an oath that they would never be separated from each other, either in life or death. And because of their virtues, they were a source of edification for others. A little sidebar here. Real friendship. There's not much of that today either, is there? A real friend is someone I can go to and scream at and yell at and be mad at, and they'll still love me. That's a real friend. And I pray that everybody in this room has at least one woman, one soul sister, one man, one soul brother that you can pour your heart out to and trust and know that that person's not going to share it with someone else, and that person's going to love you no matter what you do to him or her. But look how the evil one works. He hates true friendship. And so he was able to get into one of the brothers and severely attack him with the demon of lust. And after a while, this brother had prayed for a while, and he just could no longer resist that demon. And he said to his brother, "Release me, for I'm driven towards physical impurity, and I want to go back into the world." The other brother begged him, "Look what we've gained so far, brother. Why would we want to go back into that pit?" And then he said, "Either come with me so I can do the deed, or release me and I can go on my way." Well, bears all things, endures all things. The other brother, the afflicted brother, went, and his brother stayed with him. And of course, the afflicted brother, when he gets to the city, he goes to the house of ill repute. He does the deed, while the other brother is sitting outside throwing ashes on his head as if he was the one committing the sin. We talked about that a little bit in the sermon. Real love means wanting to do what, you know, something for others, taking away from their pain and taking it and putting it on ourselves. And then after he did the deed, he asked his brother, he said, "My brother, what have you gained by this sin, and what have you lost? Let's go back to our place." But he said, "I can't go back into the wilderness anymore. I'm going to stay in the world." So the other brother stayed in the world with him. And they both began to work as laborers. And look at God in his mercy. About that time, there was a very holy abbot named Abba Abraham. And he was building a monastery. And so they hired on along with the other workers. And what would happen? The afflicted brother would take whatever his other brother earned, combine it with his, and go into the city and do sins. The other brother continued to pray and fast. And the other workers noticed, you know, he doesn't even seem to eat. All he seems to be doing is praying. So they went to the Abba Abraham, and they talked him about him. And so Abba Abraham called this brother in, and he said, "Where are you from, brother, and what kind of work do you do?" And the brother confessed to him everything that happened. He says, "I put up with all of this, Holy Father, in the hope that God will look upon my affliction and save my brother." Mothers. Mothers. Every now and then, maybe your teenage child will fall away. But if you're praying and you're trying, God's going to look upon your affliction, and he's going to save your child. Don't forget that. What they face out there today is much worse than what I faced it, 60 years ago now. So never lose hope, mothers. And when the godly Abraham heard this, he said to the brother, "The Lord has granted you the soul of your brother." And so as he left, who was waiting at the door? His brother. He cried to him, "My brother, take me into the desert so I can be saved." And he immediately went with him into a cave near the Jordan River. And after a little while, the sinful brother had made great progress. The wounds in his soul were being healed. And then he fell asleep. And the other brother, faithful to his oath, remained in that cave and died there too. These words of St. Chrysostom give us a brief summary of the impact of the one brother's deep love on his brother who had fallen away. Love is a great teacher, able both to withdraw men from error and to reform their character and to lead them by the hand into self-denial. That's a key word. That's what we talked about again in the church. Denial of self. That's all I can give Christ. My will he's given to me. Me giving it back to him is the way I reach my Lord. Next, we're going to look at a different approach to the phrase, "Love does not seek its own." Of course, the obvious understanding has to do with being selfish, offering love on my own terms, so to speak, instead of without conditions or expectations. This story comes to us through the life of St. Evlogios the Hospitable, who on the new calendar will be celebrated. Unfortunately, we won't be able to celebrate him because it occurs around Holy Tuesday or Wednesday, April 27th, on the new calendar. He lived in the city of Thebed in Egypt during the 8th century. Now, can you picture the 8th century in Egypt at that time? Filled thousands of monastics, hundreds of monasteries. What a beautiful time it must have been for the lay people to live during that time in the world. And Evlogios was kind of an interesting dude. He was a laborer. He worked in a quarry, breaking up rocks. What would he do with his money when he got it each night? He would buy food and take care of visitors, primarily monastics who came to Thebed to get supplies for the monastery. And whatever was left, he would give to the animals. He kept nothing for himself. His whole life was daily hospitality to the monks. Well, there was an Abba Daniel. I think eventually the church also glorified him, who began praying fervently to God, not even eating food or drinking, pounding the ground with tears, begging God to give him lots of money. Because he felt, you know, if he's doing this with hardly anything, what would he do if he had all this money? So an angel of the Lord came to him and said, Are you willing to stand up for Evlogios on judgment day after he receives all this money? And, you know, he thought that'd be a very easy thing to do. He said, sure, I'll stand up for him. So then he gets a vision of two people pouring gold into the stomach of Evlogios. So what happens? The next day at work, he's hitting the ground and there was a hollow sound. And he moved the rock away and there was a lot of gold there. So he covered it back up. And that night, when nobody was there, he went and got all the gold, got on a ship, went to Constantinople, bought a villa, got slaves, started living a sinful life. Well, after 2 years, Abba Daniel gets a vision of an angel, but then next to the angel was this big, dark creature dragging Evlogios in chains. So he knew something was wrong. He immediately found out where he was, went to Constantinople, went to the villa, and what happened, of course? They didn't know who he was, so the slaves would push him away and beat him up. After he tried this a few times, he went back to the nearest church and he said to the Mother of God, please tell your son to release me from that pledge. I made a mistake. And she said, I don't know if I can do that now, son, but you keep praying. Try one more time. So he did try again. And unfortunately, this time with Evlogios, and Evlogios pushed him away. Then he gets a vision where an angel of the Lord speaks to him as if Christ is speaking, and he said, you desired to appear more discerning than I by giving wealth to Evlogios, did you not? How often do we, unconsciously, I hope, try to appear more discerning than God? God knew what would happen to Evlogios if he had the money. But Abba Daniel thought, you know, okay, I think he'll do better if he has a lot of money. And sometimes we don't make the right decision. We make a very important decision in our life without contacting God first and finding out what he wants us to do. Well, thanks be to the Panagia, she came and consoled him and convinced the Lord to forgive Abba Daniel. And the next minute he was back in Egypt, just like that. And Evlogios, well, God loved him too. The next emperor hated him and wanted to kill him, so he had to get back to Egypt, and he went back to that quarry, and he went back to his original life. You know, it's an interesting point. It just shows you that wealth can do some terrible things. Us right now, when you get a raise, do you raise the amount you give to poor people? Do you raise the amount you give to church? Or do you take that extra raise and use it for something else? We never seem to have enough money. In the kingdom of God, there's not going to be many banks other than the banks of virtue, and they have nothing to do with money. On this thing about love seeking and so on, I want to say one thing too as a warning to parents. Let's say you want to be a doctor. Don't force one of your kids to be a doctor. I'm sure Father has seen something like that. I've seen it before. I was hearing confessions of one man, and he said, I hate it. But that's what my parents wanted me to be, so I became a doctor. Let the child, through God's grace, find out what God thinks is best for his salvation. Don't force your child to live the life you wanted to live through them. Please, parents, take heed on that. Love is not provoked. You know, I want to briefly mention this one, especially for those who are married and have children. How many times have you women been aggravated by your husband's words or actions or lack of them? What about vice versa? Parents, how often have your children's indifference or words of disrespect towards you provoked you to speak harshly back at them? Never, of course, right? We never speak harshly to our kids. Children, how frequently have you become aggravated by your parents repeatedly telling you to do such terrible things as clean your room, take out the garbage, do your homework, say your prayers, it's time for bed, cut off your TV, your computer, your iPod, your video game? And those of you who are not married, how often do you become provoked by what you consider to be your parents' endless demands for your time and assistance? Or co-workers harshly treating you? What is the common factor of all these examples? Our pride. Let's keep this fact in mind. And the next time the words or actions of a family member, friend, or even a stranger provoke us to become angry or frustrated at them, let's just say no to our pride. Repeatedly tell our ego, love is not provoked. Of course, children are really good tests for that, aren't they? They test us on that. So I've failed too many times. In fact, one of my failures I'll never forget in my life. My oldest was four years old. And he was irritating me so much, I yelled at him so loud that he shivered. He's 44 now, but I can still see that shivering. May God forgive me through his prayers for forgetting that he was a child. St. Porphyrios, new saint of the Greek Orthodox Church of blessed memory, teaches us through his words and his lives that true love is above everything, and that our love both towards Christ and our neighbor must not have any limits at all. He says it should radiate everywhere, to the ends of the earth, to every single person. As an example, the Holy Yarana tells us this story of a pious hermit who had two monks in obedience to him. However, he was concerned as to whether those two monks were really making any spiritual progress, and if they were ready to receive the kingdom of God, if God called them at any time. So he entreated God to give him some indication. What do my children need? Never did he get an indication, but then God provided an example. One day, the monks at a hermitage nearby, of course, nearby for us, I should correct that. For me, it would be nearby because I could get in my car and go there in no time, but by foot, it was several hours away. And they were going to have a vigil. So he sent his two disciples ahead to help with the preparation. They left early in the morning because they were going to have to cross the desert. And their spiritual father planned to leave probably around midday. After the two young monks had traveled a few hours, they heard some groaning, someone in pain, and they saw a man lying on the ground, badly injured. He pleaded with them to take him to the nearest town. They denied his request. They said they were in a hurry to go help prepare for this vigil. And so he said, "At least take me with you so I won't get eaten by the animals." Again, they said they couldn't do it. They had to do as they were told. They left him there, showing no concern for his life at all. Later that day, the old hermit came across the same man. And at this point, rather than give you the summaries as I've been giving you, I want to share the exact dialogue here. The hermit went up and said to him, "What has happened to you, good man of God? How long have you been lying here? Did no one see you?" The man suffering replied, "Two monks passed by in the morning, sir, and I asked them to help me, but they were in a hurry to go to the vigil." "Don't worry, I'll carry you along," said the elder. "You won't be able to. You're an old man. There's no way you're going to be able to lift me up." "Not at all, you'll see. I'll manage. I can't leave you here. I'll bend down, and you will grab hold of me, and I will carry you along until we get to the nearest village. A little today, a little tomorrow, I will get you there." Notice how he puts the need of this person before even him going to the vigil. With great difficulty, the old man began to carry this injured person, walking very slowly in the desert sands, and he was sinking down, and rivers of sweat were pouring off his brow. The task seemed impossible, but he thought to himself, "It's going to take me 3 days, but I'll get there." But as he continued the journey, all of a sudden, the weight on him kept getting lighter and lighter and lighter, and pretty soon it was like there was no weight, and he looked around, it was an angel of the Lord on his back. And the angel said to him, "God has sent me to inform you that your two monks are not worthy of the kingdom because they don't have love. May it please God that on judgment day, none of us will hear that we're not worthy of the kingdom because we don't have love." But I have to tell you, this story convicted me very much. I asked myself, how many times has God sent me an angel in the form of my neighbor? Didn't St. Paul talk about that in one of his epistles? Be hospitable, because some people have ministered to angels unaware. And have I been too busy and indifferent to care for them? Through my holy Yelena Ephraim's prayers, may God grant me, through my sinfulness and unworthiness, other opportunities to allow me the possibility to make up for my unloving attitude for all these years. Speaking of my Yelena, I'll now give you the benefit of hearing some of the things he teaches us regarding thinks no evil and endures all things. Unless by God's grace we have received the state of illumination and become passionless, we undoubtedly have one or more persons in our life whose actions and mannerism towards us causes us grief. Does anybody here have somebody like that? Someone that you have difficulty with? When we harbor ill feelings towards others, the evil one sends us thoughts about all the things this person has done to upset us, seeking to get us to have evil thoughts about them. Even when we simply hear their voice, we get a little nervous. We get a bad feeling inside of us, followed by a flood of judgmental thoughts. The evil one is so ready to send us. My beloved co-strugglers in the sea of life, we must vehemently fight these attacks. And these words of my Yelena explain why. "My child, see to it that you drive away the evil thoughts to which the devil urges you to consent, especially thoughts of hatred towards the brethren. You should pay no attention to them, because the devil aims to steal from you the greatest virtue, love. If he achieves this, he has completely won over your soul. Once we have lost God, that is, love, for God, of course, is love, and he who abides in love abides in God and God in him, then what is there left to save us? And the key thing we have to just reflect on for a minute here is thoughts. One day a young man came to St. Paisios the Athenite, and he was a little dismayed, and St. Paisios could see, "My son, what's the matter?" He says, "Yeronda, I get all these terrible thoughts. And how do I stop the thoughts from happening?" And that time a plane was flying overhead. And he says, "Son," he says, "see that plane?" He says, "Can I stop the plane from flying over my head?" Well, of course, the young man thought the Yeronda was having fun with him. And he went on and said, "Oh, no, Yeronda, I can't stop the plane from flying over my head." He says, "But look around here. Is there a runway where that plane could land?" He says, "Well, no." He says, "It's the same with the thoughts. We cannot stop the thought, but don't build a runway so that it can land." That's the key. The thought in and of itself is not the sin. One of the fathers said, if thoughts were sin, nobody could be saved. Most of the time, those thoughts come when we least expect them, sometimes in terrible times. Like one time I was getting terrible thoughts at the altar, disgusting thoughts. And I told my spiritual father, and he warned me. He said, "Don't debate with the thought. Don't think about the thought. Don't let it land in you." He said, "If you do, it's going to drive you crazy." Immediately when you get the thought, go right into the Jesus prayer. And that will eventually stop the thought. And if you do it enough, the devil's going to have to try to find another thought to hit you with, because he's going to get tired of you hitting him with the name of Jesus. But that's the key. When you get those kind of thoughts, don't think. Go into the prayer, and you'll be able to overcome them. I want to now share with you, and forgive me of this kind of being chopped up because I'm cutting things as I'm going, because I don't want to make it real long here. I want to share an example from my Yeronda's ministry. I don't know how many people he told this to, but he told it to me, and it just overwhelms me. He said there was this woman who used to come to him for confession. Listen to her environment. Her husband gets a mistress. He brings the mistress to live with them. She feeds the mistress. She washes the mistress's clothes. And then the mistress gets cancer and the husband leaves. She takes care of the mistress until she dies. And after she dies, she goes to the Yeronda in tears and says, "Yeronda, ask God's forgiveness. I don't think I showed enough love to her." By the way, I tell that story a lot to women when they're complaining about their husbands. It's worked every time. And I don't say this in facetiously. I mean, you have to stop and think what my cross is and what the cross of someone else is. This woman, by the way, after that confession to Yeronda, went back to her home, and she fell asleep in the Lord. They didn't know about it, but for a week. 1 week had passed. Now, you can imagine what normally happens in rigor mortis, and body starts decaying, what that bedroom should smell like. When they opened the door, they thought they were in a rose garden. She had done what we're called to do all as Orthodox Christians. The church's greatest purpose is to make relics, ours, our relics. She's indeed a saint in the church because she endured all things in love. In his description of the final verse of this chapter, St. Chrysostom points out that our need for faith and hope will pass away the very moment our souls enter paradise, because the unseen promises of God now are both seen and experienced. Love, however, remains. Since God is agape, then genuine agape also must transcend the two things that limit us. What are the two things that limit us? Time and space. Love has to transcend that. And the fathers say, listen to this. We continue to grow in the kingdom. Eternally continuing to grow. We don't reach a point because we can't be God. So we're continually growing even in his kingdom. When we have God's love, we can never be separated from him, the angels, the saints, or our loved ones. Yenonis Itaxiadhia of blessed memory, she was the first Yenonis of the monasteries that Mike Gellner has established in the United States. And it was such an honor. What a holy woman. Let me just tell you a little about how she knew something about me before I knew. In 1987, when she came into the area, Yelena told her that I was going to come and be the chaplain someday. Well, I was in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I was happy. It was a very vibrant and a lively parish, and I thought I was going to spend my life there. Well, that was wrong, because I spent the last 21 years and 5 months at the monastery. And she also told the sisters, he's coming, but just before he comes, I'm leaving you. And she died a week before I started. During his summary remarks on St. Paul's description of agape, our Holy Father, St. John Chrysostom, reminds us, the love St. Paul requires of us is no common love, but that which cements us together and makes us cleave inseparably to one another and affects as great and as a perfect a union as though it were between limb and limb. And let me share with you that I saw today in your family. I saw the potential for that here. Very strongly. First of all, you don't just have a priest, you have a pastor. You have someone who loves your souls. And although I don't know him that well, I can sense in my spirit that if he's called to die for you, he's going to do it. So you work with Father John and build that unbelievable thing, that love that it's talked about in the book of Acts when it says they had fellowship. Bad translation. The Greek word kinonia means they had communion. They were so bonded with each other. It's like it says again in the book of Acts, and they became what? One soul. You have that ability here. Don't let what's going on out there come in here and change you. There's a lot of compromise out there today. I see it, unfortunately, occurring in my jurisdiction much more than I see it here. So pray for us, too, to find that kind of kinonia, that kind of communion that I see God planting here. But now you have a responsibility, too. That kinonia cannot be contained. He's going to bring others to you. Open your arms and welcome whoever he brings. And make this a family that really has that kinonia, that bond, that light on the hill in the darkness of this world today. So my beloved sojourners, as I like to call you, you living icons of Jesus Christ. You who are seeking to find and remain upon this narrow path that's leading to paradise. Let us all struggle daily to prepare the garden of our hearts to receive from God the faith that gives substance to hope, the hope that patiently awaits to receive the unseen promises of God. In this way, we will truly begin to truly love God and everyone else created in His image and likeness. In this way, we will begin to cast aside all the false love centered upon ourselves, other people, and the things of this fallen world. May these closing words of St. John Chrysostom inspire us to seek after this greatest of these. The love of God is that which united earth to heaven. It was the love of God that seated man upon the kingly throne. It was the love of God that manifested God upon the earth. It was the love of God that made the Lord a slave. It was the love of God that caused the beloved to be delivered up for his enemies. Nor did his love stop there, but called us to even greater things. Yes, not only did it release us from our former evils, but promised, moreover, to bestow upon us other, much greater blessings. For these things, beloved ones, let us give thanks to God, and let us follow after all the virtues. So that was a little chopped up version of my talk. I hope we have time for discussion.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you, if you don't mind taking some questions.
I'll be happy to.
Ask some questions?
I'll stay here all night if you want.
I don't mind that.
You know, this fires me up. It really does. I don't. My body keeps telling you you're 72. I say, no, I'm 35. But it fires me up when I see people really wanting the truth, seeking the real fullness, not a compromise. It'll be a couple of days before I'll be able to sleep good because I'll be too excited. Because I can see it in your faces and see your bondage to your pastor. Any questions? Yes.
You said at the end to fight the false love outside, right?
Yes.
But it's a little bit difficult. I mean, what can you give as hints to go about that?
Okay, here's...
I mean, you have friends and family who you've known all your life but who are not in the church and don't know the truth, and they are in all kinds of things in life that are not necessarily bad but are not, you know, with God. So... And they see you going back and forth to church.
Yeah.
You're a fanatic.
There, you're a fanatic. That's the key word. You're a fanatic.
And that, you know, you have nothing else to do in life while they have an interesting life and things to do. How do you give them true love?
Well, here's the thing is, first of all, you've always got to start. You've got to start with yourself. All right. That's the key. I learned this in a very unusual way. When I first came to the Pittsburgh area about 22 years ago, the mission board, the Orthodox mission board, gave me permission to try to start a new parish in that area of Pittsburgh because there was no jurisdiction at any church there. So I did what any good Madison Avenue guy would do. We grabbed a few people together. We got all the phone books. We underlined every name. Greek, Russian, Serbian, Ukrainian, Antiochian, anything we could find that looked Orthodox. And we had 400 names. And we got really excited. We were going to put signs up in Walmart and all this kind of stuff, you know. But we didn't figure out where we were going to meet, you know, to get all these people together. Well, in the meantime, God saved me. He sent a Greek theologian, a lay preacher from Greece. And I told him all these things we were going to be doing, and I was so excited. And this is what he told me. My Greek isn't that good, but this rang clear. He said, Papa, he says, one day you're going to be in a grocery store, and someone's going to come up to you and say, excuse me, sir, where do you worship? I want to go there. I'm thinking, after telling him all that, this is what he's got to tell me? It took me 3 days to figure it out. What he was trying to tell me was this. If I'm aware of the love of Christ, and that person seeking the fullness, they're going to see him in me, and they're going to want what I have. So the key to helping your friends is, first of all, we've got to find out where we are. Two things. We have this beautiful expression in Greek, we call the Mother of God, Panagia, be all holy. About 10 years ago, I added a prayer. I think she added it for me to my morning prayers. I said, Panagia, I beg you to help me to love you and your son more today than I did yesterday. And I beg you to help me to surrender more of my will to thy son today than yesterday, because I know that's what's blocking me. I look upon my will as Jericho, surrounded by the walls of my passions. And I'm praying that God in his mercy will give me the grace, knowingly or unknowingly or in spite of me, to remove those walls, even if it's at my last breath, if I can hear him say, Jericho is mine, then I know my life will be complete. But Panagia didn't stop there. About 4 years ago, she added the second thing that's equally as critical. I said, please beg your son to help me to be more open to the never-ending, unconditional, and limitless love he has for me. So these are the two things each day. To want to love him more and to be more open to his love. How do I get there? That's where the church comes in. Your daily spiritual discipline is critical. How many of us could get by eating just a teeny bit a day, maybe about 2 spoonfuls of something, and maybe a sip of water? How long would we last?
5 minutes.
Yes, there's honesty right there. 5 minutes. We wouldn't last long. And we do everything we can to make sure our body's healthy, right? We take vitamins, we exercise, we do all these things to take care of something that's going to be food for worms. The soul also has to eat, all right? What's the soul's diet? Worship. God created us to worship him. It's innate in every person. So the more we worship, the diet of the soul is going to be very pleased. Prayer. The Jesus prayer with a prayer rope under the guidance of your spiritual father. And morning prayers, small compline at night. That's a very powerful. Of course, now we're in the great compline during the weekdays. That has to become a routine as part of me as much as I breathe. That's got to be part of my life. And saying the Jesus prayer throughout the day, with or without the prayer rope. It is the only thing in the universe that you can't do to excess. We can and often do eat, drink, sleep, work, fight, play, talk to excess. But we can never say the name of Jesus too many times. The next thing is putting into practice what we see in the gospel. And how are we going to put it into practice if we don't read the gospel? A priest told me, a bishop, God rest his soul, told me, read one chapter from the New Testament every day. And after you've done that for 2 years, add one chapter from the Old Testament. It'll take you 9 months and 3 weeks to read through the entire New Testament once, if just by reading one chapter a day. And about 4.5 years to read the Orthodox version of the Old Testament. Now you're still, look at there, you're feeding. Here's another big food. The fathers of the church, the lives of the saints. Read 2 pages from a spiritual book a day. 2 pages. That way your soul is being nurtured and nourished with the things that it wants to eat. But what if I'm not doing these things? What's going to happen? It's got to eat, right? It's going to go after lust. anger, judgment, bitterness, gluttony. It's going to eat the passions. And it's going to be fragmented, broken, loss of identity. One day, Father, I would want to go into a mall one day with a microphone and just go up here and say, before they arrested me, who are you? And see what kind of answer I get. Who are you? What would they tell me? Would they tell me I'm a living icon of Jesus Christ? Or would they say, get out of here, or my name is, or I'm a teacher, or I'm a doctor, I'm a drunkard, whatever. What's my identity? So getting back, forgive me for this real long answer here. The key is me. Me becoming, God bless you, God bless you again. me becoming an example by learning to love him more and to be open to his love. Abidor Theus of Gaza tells us of three type of people in the church. Now, when I say in, I mean people like you who go to church regularly, who have some kind of a prayer rule. He said the first type is like the son who goes in the field and works for his father because he's afraid. He's a fearing the father, and that if he doesn't do it, his father's going to zap him. I can tell you a lot of Greeks feel that way. Oh, if you don't do this, God's going to zap you, you know. That's how they get you to do it. The second type is like the son who goes in the field and works because he feels by working he's going to get something back. I think we all fall into that. The third is like the son who goes in the field and works for the father, neither out of fear nor out of the desire to get something back, but because he knows he is loved. When we know we are loved here, that's going to make an impact out there, a big one. To those who hate that kind of love, it's going to cause people to get mad at us. But that's when we have to remember it's long-suffering and kind. Anger, Father, I always say that the second most powerful demon today next to lust is anger. Everybody's angry today, especially on the highways. I got angry when I was on the Houston highway yesterday. It took us 25 minutes to get on the expressway. I said, it's 3:30. What's going on here? What are these cars going out on the road? But anger is something that has an antidote. You know what the antidote to anger is? Kindness. Kindness. And this story will illustrate to you beautifully how kindness is the anger antidote. There was a young man in the early 20s in Greece, lived in a village, and he had a terrible problem with anger. Regular confessor, though, he went, confessed his sins. And finally, the spiritual father said, son, we got to take dramatic action with your anger. I mean, if I let you go out into the world, he said, in 2 years, you're going to be going into Athens looking for a job because you're already 17. He says, we're going to have to take dramatic action. Are you willing? He says, Father, I'll do whatever you say. He says, okay, from now on, when someone says something to upset you or ridicule you, you've got to say thank you and give them a certain amount of money. So the young man was obedient. He did what the spiritual father told him. And after 2 years of doing this, he came to the spiritual father and said, Yenana, I want your blessing now to go to Athens and look for work. And he said, son, not only do you have my blessings, he said, you're cured. You don't have to say thank you anymore. You don't have to give money anymore. And he said, I'm cured? He says, you'll see. Because this spiritual father had the gift of discernment, and he knew about this time an old Yenana, an old holy man, would sit on a rock on the way to Athens, and as these young men came in from the villages, they would have to pass him, and he would discern all of their weaknesses and bring them out and ridicule them to no end. And some of the young men would get so upset they'd go back to the village. And others would just be screaming at him as they were going to Athens. Well, when he started pulling out all the weaknesses of this young man, he started laughing. And the old man said, why are you laughing, son? He says, Yelena, for 2 years I had to pay for this. Now it's free. The Yenana pointed to Athens. He said, son, that city belongs to you. And let me tell you something about kindness. It's beautiful, too, about how God's so merciful to us. at first, if you're like me, your kindness, and it still is, unfortunately, it's going to be hypocritical at best. Between my teeth, you know, oh, yes, of course, thank you, you know. But you keep trying. And if you keep trying and your desire is to have the kindness, eventually the grace will kick in. And you'll see the effect. As a young man a few years ago did, he had a road rage problem. And his spiritual father kept telling him about kindness. And he kept trying to imply it. And after several months of this, he came in one day, and before confession, he said, Father, I finally realized what you were trying to say about kindness, how it destroys anger. He said, yesterday I was driving, and at the last minute, I realized I was in the wrong lane. And I cut over, and this man had to slam on brakes. He almost hit me. And I know it was my fault, and then I pulled to the light. He pulled next to me, rolled down the window, let him fly. The F-bombs, S-bombs, everything. He hit me hard. And he said, I remembered what you said about kindness. And I said, sir, I beg your forgiveness. What I did was terribly wrong. It's totally my fault. I probably ruined your day, and I feel really sad. And the guy goes, it's okay. He didn't know what to do because kindness destroys anger. Remember that. It's the antidote. So try it sometimes. Say thank you and give somebody money. They'll probably stop being angry at you. So do you understand what I mean about it? It's up to me to do as much as I can to love him and to be more open to his love. And that way, I become the example. I'll make a very strange statement. To me, the most powerful form of evangelism of the Orthodox is silence. One time, Abba Agathon at his monastery in Egypt, the patriarch came. And the brothers were taking him all over to see everything, and they brought him to the Abba, and they said, Abba, give him a word. And what was his response? If he's not impressed with my silence, he won't be impressed with what I have to say. In other words, it's like what happened to me when I first met my spiritual father. I'd never seen him before, but I heard that he could see into you and see your sins. And I was very fearful. And when my eyes came to his eyes, all I saw was love. And he patted me on the head, and I wept like I've never wept before because I saw my sins. I saw my filth. Many times I wish I could see it again at least once a week to remind me of how filthy I am and how much I need God to heal me. So let's work on becoming that kind of witness. Then we can talk. It's like St. Philip, you know. God took him out into the desert, and then he told him, go near to the Ethiopian. And the Ethiopian was reading something, and he said, do you understand it? He didn't start preaching Jesus Christ to be saved. In other words, become a hitman for Jesus. Here I am, you know. He said, do you understand what you're reading? And what did he say? What did he respond? Come on, don't be shy. Somebody knows. There you go. How can I understand unless someone teaches me? That was the open door. He asked for the help. And you're going to open a lot of doors by living the Orthodox faith. Somebody may come to you in a grocery store one day and say, excuse me, where do you go to church? I'd like to come. Because they see the living Christ in you. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Well, the Sheen, loved one, and the dream often, how would you explain that?
Is the loved one a living or asleep? Okay. If we see a loved one in a dream and sleep, are they Orthodox?
Yes.
You go to the priest and ask them to read their name in the proskomede, and also to do what we call in Greek a drisagno. What do you call it, Father?
Well, the panakita.
Panakita for the soul, for the souls. That soul is crying out for help. So when you remember him in a dream, and even with a loved one that's living, then I would call that loved one if they're living and say, you know, how are things doing? Is everything okay? And if they share it with you, you know, there's a problem, then get them to go to their priest and share the problem with him.
What's happening is not Orthodox. What do you do?
If it's not Orthodox, there are acts of kindness you can do for the soul. You can do a prayer rope for that person. You can, like, say, give an offering to a poor organization and say, I'm offering it in memory of that person. That will bless the soul of that person. Yes.
I have a very dear friend in Sampa. She's very close to dying. She has cancer. And my husband always tells me, he said, you should tell her, you know, try to make her become Orthodox. And I mean, I go and I visit with her, and, you know, it's very hard. I don't know how to open it up about it. And I mean, like, she's probably only got maybe 2 more weeks to live. And I don't know what to do.
Is she open to you about...
Well,
well, if you, what's your name?
Renee.
Renee, if you see a door, here's who I would call. This man right here. If she opens even a crack where he can just come and say hello, and maybe seeing the priest. If she's seeking, his priesthood will speak to her. If not, then you just pray. Pray for God to enlighten her. Every time I fly now, Renee, on the plane, I ask God to protect my plane and every plane with the angels. And if there's one person on that plane looking for Orthodoxy, I say, bring them on before they die. You know, make them come. So that's how we can help, just through our prayers. So you keep praying for her and be a friend. Be kind to her. You never know. Well, God has given you the opportunity to experience what real love is, to want to take the burden of the person on you, bear one another's burdens, and fulfill the law of Christ, right? That's what St. Paul tells us. And you've got to continue to do this. There's one problem with all of the Greek texts in the Bible, except for this one. It's got its flaws, too. But this Bible translates the Greek as the Greek. For example, when Christ says, ask and you shall receive, seek and you shall find, knock and the door shall be given, it'll be open. That's not what the Greek says, because the Greek, there's two endings in Greek verbs. One ending is once. You just do it one time. If you do it, another ending means it's continuous. So what Christ is actually saying is, keep on asking and you shall receive, keep on seeking and you shall find, keep on knocking and the door will be open. So we have to continually to do that. That's in your power, Renee. You just keep doing it and don't stop. And you want to know something? Those prayers are going to do something for that person. But I'll tell you, in the case of the Orthodox, it'll do even more. Anybody here ever meet Monk Sava? He was very close to Father Ephrem before. Yeah, Monk Sava. What a beautiful man. Great storyteller. He happened to come to the monastery and he could see I was in dismay. I'd been praying for a young Orthodox woman who was in a terrible place. I'd been praying for 6 months. Nothing was happening. I was crying for her. So he said, what's the matter, Papa? And so I explained the problem to him. And then I made actually wasn't a mistake. It was good that I said this. I said, you know, Father Salas, I don't think my prayers are doing any good. And boy, did he stop me in my tracks. And he gave me a beautiful example I want to share with you. He says, Papa, look, every time you pray for that girl, God tries to put the prayer in her heart. But if there's a wall around that heart, he doesn't throw that prayer away. He opens up a bank in heaven just for the prayers for this young woman. And every time anybody prays And the prayer can't get in, he puts it in the bank. In the meantime, he's working without overcoming her free will to put a crack in the wall. When the crack occurs, he withdraws all the prayers and sends them into the heart. And I saw what happened. 3 months later, and now it's been 20 years later, she was changed totally. And all I could think of, the crack in the wall and the prayers have been withdrawn. So your prayers for her are being stored right now. And hopefully she'll let God put a crack in that wall. You keep doing what you're doing. Yes. Yeah, you're a boss in the workplace. That's a tough job.
So when you have to take decisions, sometimes you're following the rules, but it is not working with the human brain. And you make that person hate you. And you're not something personal. You just work on following what I need to do.
In other words, they're shooting the messenger. You're the messenger, exactly. And they're shooting you. Exactly. Yeah.
So what you can do, because you really love that person, but that person is taking it so personal on himself, and he's not like, he doesn't want to even look at me or talk to me at all because I took one kind of decision because I'm following rule too.
Yeah.
So it's a very, very hard to deal with that person, and it when you pray, when I pray, Father, it's like, it's I'm struggling with my pray because of that person, because he's taking it so hard on himself, and
what you need to do, I'd say at least two things. First of all, I'm sure you're already doing it. Pray to God that God will give you his grace to be his instrument. Just say that, just to be his instrument, the way God wants you to be his instrument for this person. Okay. You can also do a prayer rope for that person every day. You can do something like that. But then the other thing, be kind. Give that person kindness. Apparently, I don't know who came up with that phrase, killing them with kindness, but they must have read the fathers, I guess. And that's how they came up with it, but that's it. Eventually, your kindness will overcome that person's anger. Even if they still don't agree with your philosophy, they'll say, you know what? I don't agree with the philosophy, but just this person's always kind to me. She must be sincere. So you be that instrument of God, and don't expect anything from the other person. You're being God's instrument. What happens? That's up to God. You do your part. We can't control other people. Nobody, you know, I can't control how someone's going to react to me, but I can control how I react to them with God's help. That's under my control. That's what I need to work on. Okay, one more, okay. Okay, the question was, what? I'm a monastic. First of all, I'm not a monastic. I was married. My wife put up with me for 10 years, and then she decided to leave. I've got 4 kids and 16 grandkids. But I've learned, I guess you'd say, by force, that nothing is more important in the world than Christ. Your husband, your wife, your children, no. You have to love him above all, not a person. I know a friend of mine who has a sister who kept telling this friend, oh, you love God more, I love my husband more, and she divorced him 2 years later. So our love is very limited. And that's why we need the monasteries, because they sacrifice, they give themselves totally to God. They leave this world. True monasticism. Now, there are some, quote, monasteries here that I've seen that are more like boys' clubs and girls' clubs. I wouldn't go to those because they don't really know what the monastic life is. They brought too much of the temporary life into the monastery. Ask Father to help you. Find some monasteries. I'll tell you, the one in West Virginia is great. I went there once, and I really loved it. It's a real wonderful community of male monastics. So if there is a desire, you need to talk to your father about it and pray about it, and God will open your heart and tell you what you need to do. And you know, I'm glad you said that, because it reminded me of another thing that I wanted to share with you. Whenever I went to a new parish, first thing I would do is go get lost in the city, because I wanted just to find out where everything was. And it was kind of interesting. When I went to Knoxville, Tennessee, I got on a side road, and there was a storefront church. And guess what was on the marquee? This was on the marquee: "Love is the outward flow of the overflow of the inward flow." And I said, uh-oh, that's my sermon for this Sunday. And I pictured this beautiful forest with a spring, and that spring nurtured flowers and trees and birds and deer, all the animals. But there was an inward source, you know, for the spring. I said, what would happen if that inward source got stopped? Well, eventually, the depth of the water would go lower and lower, and pretty soon there'd be nothing left. And that's what happens to most people. Our love would be like without the inward flow. It would be a well that's got a certain amount to give. But if there's no inward flow, eventually we run out. And that's when you get burnout, bitterness, judgment, and all those things. But if there's an inward flow, like St. Paul said, God help me if I don't proclaim the gospel. You've got to give it out. Because as you give, God replenishes it. So that outward flow can't exist unless I have an inward flow. And that inward flow is knowing that, you know, you're having God's love and knowing that He loves me. Father, I want to thank you with all my heart. It was a great joy
Thank you.
To be with you.